Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Travel Department. Discover hundreds of unforgettable destinations with expert local guides.
But first, Paddy Armstrong was a young Belfast man living and working in London in 1974 when the police arrested him on suspicion of having carried out the Guildford pub bombings. He was wrongfully convicted and sentenced to life in prison, along with Jerry Conlon, Paul Hill and his then-girlfriend Carol Richardson. Even though the Balcombe Street Gang, an active IRA unit, confessed to having planted the bombs, the Guildford Four were detained in prison for 15 years until their release in October 1989. Then Prime Minister Tony Blair apologised to them and their families in 2005, but nobody from the police or the judiciary was ever sanctioned for conspiracy to pervert the course of justice, and the files on the case remain sealed. Well, Paddy's story is told in a new play by Mary Elaine Tynan, Don Witcherly and Niamh Gleeson, and Don plays the part of Paddy. Earlier this week, Paddy and his wife Caroline invited me to their home in Clontarf and I spoke to them both. I began by asking Paddy to tell me about where he grew up in Belfast.
The Falls Road, which was a great place to grow up in. You had all different streets, houses on each side of the street and all different families living there, and then at the bottom you had the shops. And it's great. And then I go up, cross one of the roads and into school.
Happy childhood?
Oh, great. Couldn't have a better place to grow up.
And tell me about your mum and dad and brothers and sisters. What was your family like?
My family were great. My mum and dad were the best you could have.
You were blessed amongst women in your house, weren't you, Paddy? You had loads of sisters.
Well, my sisters were great and they looked after me so much. If I'd done anything wrong, they're the first ones to get on me back.
Were they bossy, did I hear you say once?
Well, to me, anyway.
How many sisters?
Three.
Three sisters. So you moved to London, didn't you, Paddy, in the 70s? What was that like when you first went to London? How old were you?
I think London was very good. I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? It was great going around and the different pubs and meeting people and enjoying it. Like,
you were very young when you went to London, weren't you?
Yeah, 24. Younger than 20, but before I was 24.
And did you live in squats and stuff? I think that's where you bumped into Carol at the time. Was it your girlfriend in a squat?
Oh, yeah, but I lived near a squat. Then I stayed in one. And I met Carol and that was great. Great fun.
But great times.
Oh, I tell you, best times in my life, one of the good times in my life, getting married and all that. But that was one of the good times in my life, the name days.
When you were in London first at all those parties in the squats, I think, is that where you first met Jerry Conlon at one of those parties?
Oh, yeah, but a long time ago. But I met him in Belfast as well. But he was a great lad. Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the best lads you could meet.
Can you remember at all, Paddy, it's so long ago now, but when you were first arrested, can you remember that day?
I do indeed, yeah.
Would you tell me about it?
Well, I'm not sure where I was, but the police broke in. She says, right, are you Paddy Armstrong? I went, yeah, right, we want you, you're under arrest. I says, what for? She says, bombing Guildford. I said, what if it's Guildford? She said, I haven't a clue where it is. Listen, you're coming, Russ, we're arresting you. That's it, end of the story. You're getting done for it. And they done it. And then they told us they had to get somebody. That's why they got us. And they knew we were innocent.
Yeah, and listening to you, Paddy, you are so fair about everybody. You like to be so fair about everybody. But when they first arrested you, they treated you appallingly.
I thought they were hooligans.
Tell me what they did to you. And that's how you ended up making a confession.
When they arrested us, kicked you, pushed you, threw you on the ground, picked you up, pulled you along, and then threw them around you, pushing you and shouting at you and screaming at you. Just 24.
Didn't they hang you out one of the windows?
Oh, yeah, they hung me out the window. She says, that's what I want to do for you. I want to throw you out.
How terrifying was that?
Well, real terrifying, you know what I mean?
Paddy, after they did things like hung you out the window, which was clearly so terrifying. That's obviously when you made a confession.
Oh, yeah. Because the pressure was under. And they threaten to do my family and everything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing what they do to you.
Can you remember, Paddy, the first night you spent in prison? How awful that was.
Oh, but it was neither I've ever spent anywhere, locked up. I'm in there and I don't know what prisoners are going to do to me when I get out. Because of what I've been sentenced to prison for.
Mm-hmm.
But they were great. Once I got to realise that I was innocent.
That first night in prison, Paddy, when you were so terrified, I read in your book where you speak about how you clasped the mattress so much so that you made your fingers bleed because you were so frightened.
Well, yeah, because the abuse you were getting, like, you know what I mean? Oh, there's the bomber. You're a terrible person, what you done? Like, well, I didn't do anything. And that's a frightening thing that you stay in your cell, thinking out. Because every time they pass my cell, they knock on the door, well, you're a bomber, yes, where you shoot me.
Paddy, down the years, I've been lucky enough to have interviewed Jerry Conlon, Paddy Hill, other men like you who spent prison terms for something they never did. And initially they said the treatment in the prison was appalling, that they were treated worse than paedophiles.
Oh, no, because it was the most horrible thing to ever go through. My first year was horrible because people didn't want to speak to me because they thought I was a bomber, give you abuse, shout at you. You go down to go to the association, let's get up, lads, the bombers are wrecked, and walk away.
How did you keep going? I mean, did you, well, when you were alone in bed at night in your cell?
Oh, crazy. That first week you're in prison, you go crazy. But the first couple of months, I felt like doing myself in. You're going down your knees praying for the Lord to get me released, and prisoners were shouting at me and screaming at me, we don't want you near us. So they had to put me in solitary confinement.
Did you assume at the beginning, Paddy, when you went into prison, that very quickly people would realise this was a terrible mistake and you'd get out?
Oh, yeah, but it takes a while, you know what I mean? Because not long after the arrest, they got people on a siege. And when they went to court, said to Judge, before we say anything, the force we done, you got the wrong people in prison, we bomb Guildford.
Yeah, the Balcombe Street guys.
Balcombe Street guys. Mm. That was a year, we were only in prison less than a year. But the judge says no use of all together.
Mm-hmm.
No, man. But when I'm dying, it took a few years for it to happen. Like, but they, when they realized the word went around, but you used to come down for association, you used to get up, was sitting down, and Reggie Cray, one of the top criminals, when we were speaking to me, says, how you doing, Paddy? I went, not too bad. She says, I'm Reggie, one of the top people. That's the major Reg. He says, oh, by the way, I passed the word around, nobody's going near you. I'll be looking for them. Because we were told you were innocent.
Because as you say, Paddy, after the terrible times, when a lot of people realised in there you were innocent, you had some crack, you made some friends.
I made plenty of friends. We met Hooch, yeah, it was great to meet Mick Hooch.
What's Hooch?
Drink. They got different stuff that people have made it.
Mm.
And strong. Or gamblers, big gambling and all, tiny. Very heavy gambling. I made a few quid, lost a few quid.
And a bit of music as well?
Oh, music as well, yeah. My mum came to see me and she brought me a Jim Reeves album. And I said, oh, thanks very much, because I didn't want to say I don't want it. But when I went in, one of the lads says, Paddy, I love him. She says, you want my Pink Floyd one? I'll take that one off you while we're here.
You never told your mother, did you?
I never told me. No, I did. After a while, I said to her, she said, well, I realised you were going to do something like that because you didn't make it.
Paddy, let me ask you something about Carol Richardson, if that's okay. I know she was your girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. She was arrested and also put away for decades. I know she's sadly dead now.
Yeah.
But you felt very guilty about that.
I did indeed, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, I felt sorry for her and guilty about it because we were going out together and this and that. And I was arrested and they arrested her as well because there's supposed to be a woman and a girl had done the bombings.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I felt so sorry and ashamed that it happened.
But of course it wasn't your fault, Paddy.
I know it was my fault, but if she hadn't been going out with me, she wouldn't have been in there.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's the way I look at it. That's the way I was looking in it.
Mm. Did you stay friends after you got released?
Oh, yeah. Mm. She was very good. seen her a few times. You know what I mean? She says, Paddy, I don't blame you what happened to me, so don't worry about that. You know what I mean? What happened to all the whole four of us.
Tell me about your relationship, Paddy, with Alistair Logan. He was a hero in your life, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Cause
he was your solicitor.
When he came to see me, I was quite surprised that he was from Guildford. And he says, Paddy, I'm here because I believe you're innocent and I'm here to fight your case. He says, otherwise I wouldn't have took your case. But I think you didn't do it.
I mean, he really dedicated his life to you and your case.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
All of you, the Guildford Four.
I meant the people he probably lost over it. But it was amazing what he done for us.
How important was he in your life, Paddy?
Oh, very important. You know what I mean? He fought for us while we were in prison all them years, while we were in prison, like fighting people abusing him and giving him abuse and everything.
Can you remember, Paddy, the moment you heard you were a free man, you were going to be released?
Oh, well, I heard the next day when the school opened the door. I said, what do you want? He said, I've a ticket to London. I said, what for? He said, I don't know. He said, it's my day off and I've called in to take you. So when I got into prison in London, I heard people, prisoners, going to each other. I said, the Guildford Four getting released. And I went to one of them. I said, I'm on the Guildford Four. He said, congratulations, you're getting released tomorrow. I went, no, I'm not. I says, you are. And that's the first I heard of it.
And you went out the back door, didn't you, of the
I did, yeah.
court?
Yeah. But then Carol didn't want to go out either. So she wanted to go out the back, so we went out the back together. But there was people outside the back door waiting for me, you know. So, but it's great to see everybody and the people that were there. And when I went around the front to get interviewed and all, I went to clapping and cheering. Mm. It was unbelievable.
How strange was the outside world? In terms of paying bills or...
My first day out, walking around, I'm going, where am I? It took me a while to get used to people again. But it was so strange that first day out that I wasn't going back into a prison cell. I was going into a proper bedroom for the first time in a long time. You know what I mean? And lying on it and going, it took me a long time to get asleep. I said, I was waiting on the screw, locking the door and opening the door for me in the morning when I woke up.
Did you miss the routine of a prison?
Well, you want to, you know what I mean? Because I spent 15 years there in prison and doing something for that length of time. The first day I'm out, I'm opening the door and go outside. I'm going, what's this? All this traffic going around and me going, I guess, trying to cross the road. People going, nobody can go there. You have to. Cars are a bit too fast now. When you step outside the courtroom, took the street for the first time in 15 years, you know. Well, where am I? I went back in again, stood in the hallway.
When you left prison, Paddy, Alistair Logan once again was very good to you, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was almost like a father figure to
you. He was, oh yeah. He looked after me, so he did.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? But he's one of the most amazing people that you can meet.
Because when you came out at first, did you end up drinking and gambling? I mean, could you cope with the outside world?
Nope. I went, few bets. But then after a while, you got used to it. So cut the drink down. Because I was drinking too much and gambling, and he took over. He says, no more drinking, no more gambling. That's it. You know what I mean? And then after a couple of weeks, I got back into the routine that he wanted. And then the more you got into that routine, the more you got enjoying life and getting back to normality and not even worrying about prison anymore and just get on with your life.
Where do you think you'd be, Paddy, if you hadn't gone to prison?
Who knows where I'd have been. Mm. That's what I always thought. Didn't know where I'd be. I'm always said to myself, probably the best thing might have happened to me, because you never know what I'd done, what I went through, what would have happened to me or whatever.
And you wouldn't have met your fabulous wife, Caroline?
No, and I came out of prison. That was the main best thing to me.
Where did you meet her?
International one.
We met in the International Bar.
International Bar.
We were at blues gig. Yeah. Well, Paddy introduced himself. Well, in those days, you could smoke in the pubs.
I just turned
around to this guy whom I didn't know, and he had long hair, tied back in a ponytail, leather jacket, And, you know, I asked him, have you got a light? You know, because I wanted to have a cigarette. And he just said to me, he shook hands with me and said, my name is Paddy Armstrong and I'm one of the Guildford Four. And I just said, what? I didn't know too much about them because if you asked me to name the Guildford Four, I would have only known Jerry.
Well, I said, because when I met her, I wanted to get on with her. She said, so the best way for me to do it is tell her who I am and what happened to me. And then she knows.
You weren't afraid it would put me off, no?
I know, I'm glad it didn't. You know what I mean? But I didn't want you find out afterwards without me telling you first. You know what I mean?
So you liked her, obviously, from the moment you saw her.
I did indeed. Fell in love with her.
What year was that?
That was 1996, on my birthday, actually. And so Paddy was out, I suppose, around 6 or 7 years from prison at that stage. And, you know, I asked him a couple of questions about the Guildford Four, but he didn't really want to talk that much about details. And he just told me a few little things. And he more or less told me to watch In the Name of the Father, and which I hadn't seen because I don't watch things which have sad endings. And or well, that yeah, had a happy ending.
But it's hard for me to tell her because I was chatting her up and wanted to go out with her. Wondered if it'd be my girlfriend.
Mm. Were you afraid what she'd think?
Yeah. I think I was probably guilty of what happened.
Even though you'd been found innocent, Paddy.
I know. Yeah, but that's after 15 years. Mm. That's a long, totally different. But I'm glad I met her.
When you went home to your family and friends and said, I met this fella, he's one of the Guildford Four, what did they say?
Well, I didn't even have to go home because at the end of the night, we had a bit of banter and I was with my friends. My brother was actually playing in the band and he's a Garda. And I went up to him at the end. Paddy gave me his number and said, oh, ring me, we'll go out, I'll cook you a curry. So I went up to Sean and I said, I've just met Paddy Armstrong out at the Guildford Four and he wants to go out with me. And Sean said, I've met Paddy, he's a real gentleman. But he said, he's probably up to his neck in drugs and everything. He said, and you're a teacher, you could lose your job. Very concerned. So I said, oh. So I kind of took him at his word and I didn't ring Paddy then for again, you know. But a couple of months later, I did meet him at another gig in Midnight at the Olympia. And that was the start of it. Paddy came home with me and we're together ever since.
So you got married?
We got married a year and a half later.
Where?
Here in Clontarf in our beautiful church here, and my choir sang at the wedding. It was really a fabulous day.
And you have two beautiful children.
And we have two gorgeous kids. And Paddy has spoiled rotten. Yeah, so we're very lucky. We've had a really happy life together.
Why did you agree to this new play about your life, Paddy? And are you happy with it?
Then I'm out and menacing. I want people to realise it and have a story like that, where people come see it and hear you talk and know you're serious about what you're saying. You know what I mean? Because to me, that's the best way to do it.
And do you like how you're portrayed by Don Whitchley?
Oh, yeah. He's very good.
Yeah.
After seeing him afterwards, I said, you were very good. Thanks very much.
Is he as good looking as you?
Not as good looking, you know what I mean? But you never know. He's better looking than me.
And I think you like the fact that there's lots of fun and laughter. It's not all depressing and there's great music.
Oh, no, but that's great. That's to me, if it hadn't been like that, I wouldn't have liked it. It was the best play to write about us.
What makes you happy these days, Paddy? I mean, you have your beautiful wife, Caroline, sitting here in the room with us beside you. You have your son, John, and your daughter, Sophie, together. Yeah. How important are these three people in your life?
The most important people in my life. And I'm glad what's happened. As my Caroline, we have my son, John and Sophie. Because to me, this brought me back into real life and proper life and enjoying life.
And how much do you adore your children?
Oh, I love them so much. I really, really adore them and really, really love them.
What did it mean to you to have children?
It means a big part of my life. I had children is the most amazing thing to happen to me. Because when you're in prison, you never think that you're going to be out having children, getting married, having children, everything. and having that, marrying Caroline and having children was an amazing thing. It was even better than getting out of prison.
You spoil them, though. I was reading last night that you actually even heated their clothes on radiators before they went to school.
Oh, yeah.
You're showing us all up, Paddy. Yeah.
But that's the way I was. Listen, to me, the most amazing thing in my life, and this is what I'm doing for the rest of their lives, and it was great.
Well, look, Paddy, thank you so much. I really appreciate you telling me your story today. You're actually going to enjoy a cup of tea now with your good friend, playwright Mary Elaine Tynan. And then, Caroline, you're going to tell me just a little bit more about your life together after this break.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Welcome back. Caroline Armstrong, well, she's still with me. And Caroline, I want to explain to our listeners that, you know, you want to tell me more about family life and the effect of his prison term on your husband, Paddy, but you don't want to talk about him while he has to sit and listen. So he's going off for a cup of tea with his friend and we'll continue on. You were a teacher, of course, when you met Paddy, a music teacher in a big school in Dublin. How did the school react, or did they react, when you said you were going out with Paddy?
No, they were thrilled. You know, there was no problem there. In fact, the school had Paddy in later years over to talk to the transition year students. And, you know, that's how he really started, because he was very quiet. He didn't do interviews or anything like that. So his role of dealing with the media really stemmed, I think, from those school talks. Just a friend of mine had him over to give his experiences. And the children were really amazed, and they didn't know I was married to him at the time. And then it came up and they were going, oh, that's Miss Harnes' husband.
And when you had John and Sophie, he was an amazing stay-at-home dad, wasn't he?
He was unbelievable. Now, I suppose we've had a great life, very happy. Paddy is just such a warm, kind person. He doesn't worry or stress about things. And it can work, you know, well in some ways and not in others. But I suppose any issues we might have had would have always been him spoiling the kids. You know, if I gave them a chore to do, he would run and do it before they could do it. Or he'd praise them for brushing their teeth or, you know, he tried to do everything for them and spoiled them rotten. But he was also a fun dad, you know, he was unconventional.
You're so closely aligned to him. What effects have you seen in him from the time he spent in prison?
Well, it ranges from small things like, you know, if you come up to, he's kind of nervous around policemen or guards. You know, if you come up to a checkpoint, he'd get quite nervous, just uneasy. But the bigger things really were the fact that he could never cope with money, pay bills. He couldn't hold down a job. He couldn't work outside the home. So those were the big issues, really. He wouldn't have been able to forward plan. He lived in the present, in the moment, you know, most of the time.
Did he ever get any professional help with PTSD, or did he suffer from PTSD?
Well, when he came out first, he was quite bad. So Alistair Logan, he got two of the top guys in Harley Street to, you know, he got loads of help before he went public. All of that was done. But I do think, you know, that experience, it doesn't go away. You know, he loves his life and his family life, but there are repercussions from being incarcerated, you know, for 15 years for something you didn't do.
Did he ever suffer from nightmares? Remember Jerry Conlon telling me he had terrible nightmares?
Yeah, he did suffer from nightmares, but he wouldn't remember them. He also doesn't like to talk about the bad experiences. He glosses over them, and he likes to tell you funny things. You know, he just doesn't dwell on sad, the awful stuff that happened.
I can see that in him. He's just incredibly positive and kind about everybody.
He is, and he takes everyone at face value. He loves everybody. You'd never hear him saying a bad word about anybody. He doesn't read into motives for this, that and the other, even about, you know, the awful experience he had in prison. You wouldn't know by talking to him, because he just doesn't talk about it easily.
He's not bitter.
Not bitter, which is amazing. Mm. And from the word go, he's not bitter. He's just a very happy disposition, really. He's very content with his life. Yeah, I never saw bitterness in him.
Now, he was a great stay-at-home dad, but did he find it hard to get work out of the home?
He tried a couple of times, but not very hard, to be honest. He did gardening with two of his friends, but they fired him after about a week because he ended up in the house with the housewives having tea and cake, telling them his story while they were out digging the garden. So I said, Paddy, this is not working out. So no, he didn't really work. He wouldn't have been able to hold down a job.
And as we've spoken about, you have these two wonderful children, John and Sophie. When they were slightly older, at what stage did you explain their dad's story to them? And how did you do that?
Well, this is the funny thing. I came home from school one day. In my mind, I said, we'll have to sit them down and explain, you know, and that he was innocent, you know, because kids, you kind of protect them from all that when they're young. But I came home from school and John, he might have been in junior infants or senior infants. And Paddy told me he had told him the whole thing about the Guildford Four and how he was in, he was in prison for something he didn't do. And I'm going, you did what? I was aghast. And he says, yeah. I said, no, I was really worried. I said, he's going to go into school and say my dad was in prison and nobody will want to play with him. He won't be able to explain the situation. And so Paddy took it on himself to let them know.
And it worked out fine.
Absolutely, yeah. But I was kind of more careful, thinking John wouldn't be able to explain it. And we didn't go around saying, oh, Paddy's won the Guildford Four. You know, Paddy loads, he knows everyone in Clontarf. But, you know, it wasn't something that we would have. We just lived in the community as a normal couple, you know.
What's his life like nowadays on a daily basis?
Nowadays, like, his health has declined. His short-term memory is quite poor. And it is strange, like, he now kind of centres himself in one room. You know, he has his TV in there, he sleeps in there, all his belongings in there. He doesn't like you to touch anything. But that is his go-to place. It reminds me of a cell. You know, he doesn't move throughout the house or come in and sit in the sitting room or anything like that. He likes being there watching TV. He's kind of gone more into himself. Mm-hmm. And I suppose one fear I have is that if his condition does progress, that it might bring back something of, you know, what has happened to him. I don't know if that will come out in any shape or form.
Like, as though he's regressing back into living in a cell, as you said.
I think so, yeah. But he's happy in doing that. Mm. And whatever makes him happy makes me happy. So it's, you know, I don't have a problem with it, but it's interesting. Mm. He doesn't go out anymore. He used to always go to the pub for a few pints of Guinness. He loved his Guinness. And he doesn't drink anymore. Or, you know, he's just become more inward, you know, thinking.
And would he eat alone or in the room or...?
He always liked to eat alone in front of the TV if he was watching a programme different from me. So we didn't really do the big sit down every evening at the table. But we would always go out for meals together, and maybe for Christmas, Easter, we'd always, you know, have our meals on those special occasions. But wouldn't be a big deal. But yeah, he does eat on his own in there mostly. And we don't go to restaurants anymore. He doesn't feel that... comfortable out of his environment. Yes, there are changes.
And we were lucky enough to meet your daughter Sophie today, but I know that Sophie and John, they've an amazingly strong relationship with their dad, don't they?
Totally. Like, I suppose because I went out and I was teaching, so Paddy really reared them for most of the day. And, you know, I came home from school one day and Paddy was there playing poker with Sophie. She might have been about 4 or 5. They had the chips on the table. Another day, he used to let the kids write on the wall, like John in particular. You know, he had a lovely yellow room and the front room was yellow. And, you know, John would be drawing on the wall and he'd think this was great. And one day I came home, there was a huge pig drawn on the wall and no way did John do it. Paddy was joining in. It was like, yeah. So he really did spoil them enormously.
Paddy's not angry. Are you, and are the children sometimes angry when they think of what happened, their dad or not.
No, Paddy's not angry. The children look on Paddy as dad. They don't buy into the whole political end of things. And John, like, he's 25 now, he'd say, well, dad's just dad to me. You know, they're not overly interested in the political end of things. You know, they love Alistair now, and we've been over to visit Alistair, and they know, and you know, all Alistair has done for him. And Alistair is John's godfather. But no, they're hugely into their father, but they don't, it's dad to them. So they don't get too involved in what happened. They'd never talk to him about it or that. Although Paddy did go to John's school as well, Belvedere, and he gave a talk there, and John was very proud of him, you know, for doing that.
Are you angry on his behalf?
Like, I'm not an angry person, but when I think, it is heartbreaking what happened. And what makes me really angry is the fact that his life and lives of the others were destroyed by lies told by the police and the miscarriage of justice. Now, not only just lies, but the people who did it they were given high positions. They were promoted. And it's incredible that they're rewarded for this. I'm annoyed as well, very angry about the fact that the files relating to the case have been locked away till nearly the end of the century. Again, that's, to me, it's sinister, because who'll be around to defend what comes out in those files? You know, it's protection for the people who I think did all of the wrong things.
Well, Caroline Armstrong, it was such a privilege to come into your happy home today in Clontarf. Thanks for inviting us in.
Well, thank you. It's been lovely, and it's lovely for Paddy as well. He really enjoyed the chat, and we enjoyed it. And thanks, Miriam.
Thank you both so much. I'm glad you met each other.
Thank you.
And that was Caroline Armstrong talking to me about her life with Paddy. And really, thanks so much to them both for inviting us into their home earlier this week. So much reaction to it. I'll just bring you one before the break. Miriam, I'm struck by that interview with Paddy and his wife, Caroline. They seem like the most genuine people, and he has been so forgiving for what happened to him. Good for him. He managed to turn something terrible into something good. They deserve justice for what happened to them. And that's from Brendan. Well, the play, Paddy, The Life and Times of Paddy Armstrong, written by Mary Elaine Tynan, Don Witcherly and Niamh Gleeson. It will be in theatres around the country in the coming months, including the Hawkswell in Sligo next weekend, the Pavilion in Dunleary from the 20th of June, and the West Cork Fit Up Festival in July, and plenty more, including the London Irish Centre at Halloween. All details are on lifeandtimesofpaddy.com. We'll be back with Horse Lips after the break.